And we are rolling again, boys and girls.
Yeah.
Going on with the wrap, episode 41. And yes. A one now on that one. So this time we'll spare you all the useless banter. We did that pre-show, so you don't have to worry about that, unless Levi decides to just throw it in there anyways. We are convinced that someday when we get down maybe to like episode 100, we'll do like a flashback, like a look back at all the episodes, and all the B-roll will come out of all the crazy
Here's
stuff
the thing,
that
I
happens.
I don't keep all the B-roll.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just the good stuff.
Takes a lot of space.
Yeah, B-roll's taking up a lot of space, and we ain't got a lot of space.
Yeah. I'll start saving some.
We need a whole separate hard drive for B-roll.
Yeah.
Is what we need. Well, we are moving today in our story through the Bible as we continue to talk about what really is, and kind of notice this, all the stories that happen kind of after Genesis 12 are the story of Abraham.
Yes.
You know, so Abraham fathers Isaac. And then Isaac fathers Jacob and Esau, which we're going to talk about today. And then Jacob will father what becomes the 12 tribes of Israel, centering in on the story of Joseph that we'll talk about next week. But all of it really is kind of the continuing story of Abraham.
Right.
And God's promise to Abraham, even though God continues to reemphasize that promise and that covenant with each individual person, that promise gets carried on in. But today we talk about what is a kind of an unusual story. You know, like, it wasn't really, honestly, hard to preach a sermon, but you're just like, this is kind of an odd subject to really talk about and really think through. And it's a story of Jacob and Esau, and particularly what we're going to hone in on today, Jacob being a thief.
Tricksy, he is. He's very tricks. Full of tricks.
Tricky. He's a tricky one. He's like he's the little rabbit on the box of tricks.
Yeah
that's what he is. I think about it this way. Have you guys ever had somebody in life who... is a certain type of person around everybody else, but around you, like, you know the real them.
Yeah.
But they put on this air in front of everybody else, and everybody else thinks, like, they're the greatest person. Oh, you know that so-and-so. He's just, oh, and you're like, oh, yeah. No, he's not, really. I've had several instances out in my life, and we joke a lot in my family. Crystal, this is not a joke, but... it's going to sound really bad when I say it, actually. Her grandma on her mom's side passed away a few years ago. And they went to the funeral. And the people at the funeral were just like, oh, they're just distraught. They're beside themselves crying. And all these nice flowing things about this woman. And everybody in Crystal's family, like, looking around each other, like, did we come to the right funeral? Because that's not the person that we knew. That's really horrible. Hopefully Crystal doesn't watch this, nor any of her family. I wasn't trying to be insensitive, but I was just trying to make my point. That sometimes we
people have a very different perception of people sometimes.
There you go. Thank you for wrapping all that up. Maybe I should have handed that over to you and let you just say that rather than a whole convoluted story. But I love stories.
Stories, that's where it's at.
In fact, my good buddy Mal Gibson told me yesterday, he goes, Ryan, you have the best stories. I'm like, that's weird because I always feel like I have pretty boring stories and everybody else has great stories. So maybe I do have some good
And that's
stories.
Saying something coming from Mal.
Oh, Mal's full of master stories. Master of stories, by the way. Anyways, getting into our story for the day, Jacob. Now, what do you usually think of when you hear the word Jacob in a biblical sense? What do you automatically get a picture of?
I just get the, you know, I think of him fathering the 12 tribes. You know, you immediately go towards, well, you know, he was following God, is what you kind of feel like.
So we automatically go to the good qualities,
right?
Jacob, leader of, father of, here's another big word for you, progenitor.
That's
a bit, look that one up, boys and girls. That's a real word, and it makes sense in this
context.
Should
have it come across the screen. Progenitor.
Of the tribes of Israel. You're thinking, like, this isn't the dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Jacob was kind of a turkey.
He was kind of sly.
He was really gross, actually. Really gross. We look at, and again, this is what I'm talking about. We see him as one thing, but he really is another thing. We see him as the clean-cut boy next door that every mom would love their daughter to be able to marry.
Right.
But do you know
and you always think of, you know, the Bible saying, you know, he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Right?
Oh, yeah. The three there, man.
Yeah, the big fathers of the faith, right?
So we look at him as a boy next door, clean cut, the mom, every mom would want their daughter to marry this guy, like Jacob.
Yeah.
Really, and no offense here, but he's the greasy used car salesman.
I was thinking the same thing.
Like, that's what he is, man. Yeah. I mean, no offense. There's some really
he's
great...
He's that type of person you really don't want to deal with,
you know,
right?
Like, I mean, you look at him and you just go... you just, like, you kind of throw open your mouth because, like, what this guy does is so below the belt. Mm. And here's the thing. What we have to see in this story is there are really two things at stake in this story of Jacob and Esau. It's a big, long story. It spans several chapters, so we don't have time to go into all of it. But basically, it boils down to this. Two things are at stake, a birthright mm-hmm. and a blessing. And the first thing that we see in about Genesis 25 is that we've got two boys. And this is a problem, by the way, because it's like every other thing has been Abraham has a son that he passes on. Mm-hmm. Now Isaac has two. What's going to happen? We've got two boys here.
One of them.
One of them's not going to get a blessing. One of them's going to get blessed. One of them's not going to get blessed. And what would we automatically assume in our human thinking and perspective? Who's going to get this blessing?
The oldest.
The oldest, right. Who is?
Well, even in that culture.
Oh yeah, the culture was also
it.
Which was who?
Esau.
It was not Jacob. All right. And so he gets the birthright, and we would be like, well, what's the big deal with that? Like, we don't understand that in our world today. Birthright means nothing to us today. I mean, like, cool, you're the oldest one, but that gets you nothing.
Which is really sad, because I would have the birthright.
Me too, right? I would have the same thing, but I don't get that. Here's what it really meant and why it was so important in Jacob and Esau's time. The oldest one who got the birthright got a double share of the land, mm-hmm. got more of the wealth, got more of the prestige and the power and the family leadership. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so it's no small thing, but what we see in the story is it seems like Esau just really doesn't much care about this birthright, does he? Mm-hmm. Like, he cheapens it. He has no respect for it. Jacob wants it. And so what does Jacob do? You remember the story? What does he concoct? You know, even before these two guys are grown up and we hit this part of the story, we know something's not going to be right in this story because it says even in their mom's womb, these guys
were
fighting.
Like, and Jacob was holding on to Esau's heel.
They're fighting in the womb. But then we come to this point when they're grown men. And
things have not gotten better.
No, nothing gets any better with these guys. They're squabbling over what?
They're squabbling over... his birthright.
A birthright, right. Over what, though?
Soup.
Soup.
Bean soup. You know, lentil soup.
Bean soup. Lentil soup, yeah. And Esau comes in. He's the manly man of the bunch. Jacob is the homebody, and he comes in. Jacob's been fixing this meal. Esau's come in from a big, long hunt. He hasn't caught anything. He's discouraged. And, like, we get this overly dramatized, like, Esau's just, like, dragging himself home.
I think he even uses the terminology of, I'm dying of hunger.
I'm dying here. Like, we use that phrase over and over. Right. Like, I'm so hungry, I'm dying of hunger. No, you're not. And again, and guess what, Esau? You aren't either. You aren't dying of hunger, bro. And so he drags himself in, and he says, ooh. He goes, that smells so good. That looks so good. Which, by the way, don't miss that. That is such a problem in life for so many people, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The things that look good, smell good, seem good, we just like, oh, I've got to have that.
We want to fulfill that immediate gratification. Right?
And desire, like and passions, we want to fulfill those things.
No matter what, it costs us in the future sometimes.
You remember what I said about Esau? What does he kind of come off as? Like the, caveman.
Oh, yeah.
Me want.
I was trying to think.
Yeah, you're like,
Levi, you were listening to the sermon,
me
right?
Me want, me take, me have. That's what I, it was really interesting about the story I said is.
You got to kind of wonder, knowing Jacob's personality of being a deceiver, right?
Which is honestly what his name means.
You really think maybe that lentil soup was no accident? Right? Like,
No. Yeah, he
meant
to
do that.
He set the trap, he baited the trap, he sprung the trap. He knew exactly.
He knew when he could be coming back.
And again, that's what's so interesting about Esau is like you see in his personality and his mannerisms, you're like, honestly, Esau is very likable. I mean, like, he would probably be the one that we would love to be friends with. Jacob, not so much, because we know Jacob. Like, Jacob is going to swindle us and he's going to take everything from us. We don't want Jacob. Esau, on the other hand, we're going to go out mudding with Esau, dude. We are going to go hunting some buck. We are going to just have a good old time with Esau, listening to some good old, like, Luke Bryan or something like that. We're like, let's do this. You know, anyways, I don't listen to that, by the way, but I just wanted to bring that reference in. These people are fun.
Yeah.
Fun to be around. They love life. They live it to the full. They have a zest to life. And I'm not saying that Jacob was just boring, but he probably was kind of just boring, but he was smart, and he was deceptive. He was a trickster. And you're right, that soup was no mistake. He knew, I've got Esau here on this one, because I have to believe that he had been concocting this plan for a lot of his life. I'm going to find a way to get this birthright. So Esau comes in, and he says, give me your birthright. And Esau says, I'm dying here. What good is my birthright if I die? And he goes, no, I need you to give me your birthright. Okay, fine, you can have my birthright. And it says Esau ate, and he got up, and he left. And he despised and hated his birthright. So Jacob now has a birthright. He has the importance of land, power, prestige. He's greedy. Here's a very interesting thing about the whole story. As we move from birthright to blessing, Jacob always had the blessing. God made it apparent from the very beginning, didn't he, with Isaac and with Rebekah, and said this son, the younger son, is going to be the one that gets the blessing. Isn't this so indicative and true of life? I really believe this, that God says, I have given you all things. I have given you exactly what you need in your life. It's guaranteed to you. You don't need to work for it. You don't need to fight for it. You don't need to claw for it and grasp for it. I've given it to you. But don't we so often say, I want more.
Yeah, or I want it now.
I want it now.
Yeah.
I want to wait. I want more. And
I want it on my terms. Or I want... Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens in the story of Jacob. I want more, and more is never enough, by the way.
Yeah.
You can think, if I just get that one last little thing, but nope, there's always one more thing in that, and it's never enough. And so Jacob does it. And I think this is what happens, and you know this very well, as I do, that anytime we lack trust in God, what does it cause us to do in life?
It causes us to try to take things into our own hands.
Grasp.
Yeah.
Yeah, take things in our own, take control of our own life. So I think any time that we catch ourselves in those tendencies of just trying to grasp for more and trying at all costs, doesn't matter who I knock down, I'm going to get to where I need to get. If we can just step outside of that for a moment and look at that, and we say, oh, my land, I don't have any trust in God.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, what usually ends up happening, and you know, this kind of, it kind of ran through the family line if you think back to Abraham. God says, Abraham, I'm going to make you the father of many nations. Abraham didn't see it coming, didn't see it coming, didn't see it coming, and thought, well, I better take matters into my own hands, and has Ishmael, right?
Oh, yeah.
Cause problems to this day.
Yeah. This whole...
For his bloodline, like, it's...
And you're right.
It's that I'm going to rush ahead, and I'm going to do things that I think are good, and because I don't trust God to get done what he said he's going to do.
Yeah. I would say it this
and
way.
And while God's will still happens, there's consequences to it. You know, we have to live with those consequences a lot of times.
I would say it very simply this way. You can never get ahead of God.
Yeah.
And you can try. And when you do try, it causes big problems. And you're right. The whole story from Abraham all the way through Joseph that we'll talk about next week is one kind of failure after another to trust and obey God. And what happens almost every single time is there's some sort of a family squabble that happens as a result of a dumb decision of trying to get ahead of God. And that very much happens in the story of Jacob and Esau. I mean, the whole thing then comes to Isaac's getting old. He feels like he's dying, although secret, hint, hint, he didn't die for another 43 years. It's just, isn't that really one of the weirdest kind of points of the Bible? Like, it's almost like a Shakespeare play, like, I'm dying. And it's like, bro, you got 43 more years. Let's stop being melodramatic about
maybe
this.
Maybe it was just because he thought it could be any time. Right, he wouldn't make sure that
just went, well, that's the thing. Like, it wasn't, he really wanted to make sure that Esau got the blessing. So Jacob already has the birthright. Jacob's already been promised the blessing, but Isaac is trying to go against that and say, no, I'm going to give Esau the blessing. Right. And they have this whole big story that unfolds that Rebekah hears that Isaac wants to bless Esau. She says to Jacob, we got to make this right. Guess what? This ain't going to happen on mama's watch, is what she says. That's actually a very loose translation.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what she says.
It's probably accurate.
That ain't going to happen on mama's watch. And she says, oh, here's what I need you to do. I need you to go out and get two goats, and you're going to put on your brother's clothes, and we're going to make you seem like your brother. You're going to go in there, and you're going to trick your dad, and he's going to bless you before he dies. And Jacob says, he doesn't object. The only thing he objects to is, what if I get caught? And that's so true of life with us, isn't it? It's like, I don't really have a problem with any of this.
I'll do it, but what if I get caught?
I don't have a problem with any of this, but if I get caught, that's going to be a problem. Whole thing unfolds. Jacob does just exactly as his mom says, goes in, lies about it, my best guess, 6 times to his dad, out and out lies to him about who he is, just so he can get this blessing. That, guess what, again, was already his. And again, it's so much of life, isn't it, that God says, this is yours. And we feel like we have to concoct some big, grandiose plan. And it just fouls everything up.
Yeah.
And it does foul everything up in this instance. Jacob does end up getting the blessing that he so sought from his dad. Esau comes in right after and wants that blessing. And both Isaac and Esau realize in that moment what Jacob has done, and they are distraught.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, Jacob is thrown out of the home. He's in exile. He's sent to live with his uncle, Laban. And what's really sad about this story is there's a sense that as you get to the end of the story, Rebecca again steps in. She says, I've got to send you away for a few days. You know, just let old Esau kind of spin his wheels, get all of his rage out, and it doesn't happen. How long does he spend with his brother, with his uncle Laban?
He never returns.
20 years until he comes back and meets Esau again. And the real truth is probably Rebecca never saw Jacob again. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine that, honestly? You send a loved one away expecting I'm going to see them again, and you never see them again. That's really tough. All because every person in this story decided to do things in their way. And not do things in God's timing and God's plan.
Yeah.
They try to grasp and get something for themselves that was directly promised to one person. So, like, we look at this story and, like, how do we dissect this? Who's wrong and who's right? No one.
Yeah. Nobody won in this situation.
Nobody wins. Everybody loses in this entire story. And so what do you think that we should take away from a story like Jacob and Esau, Isaac and Rebecca?
I think it is just to trust God's plan.
Yeah.
And not try to grab at things ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Like God has promised to, you know, provide our needs and equip us for what he's called us to do. And the minute we try to get in our own power and start grabbing for things that are not what God wants us to grab for, we're going to cause problems in our own life and lives of others, you know, and there are going to be consequences that we have to deal with. And so making sure that we are trusting God to do what he said he's going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that we do with every biblical story that we're doing through this journey through the Bible is we try to see the Christ connection in everything. Yeah. And we look at a story like this and you're like, I don't see Jesus. Where's Jesus here? If you were to look at the story and to really make that Christ connection, where would you see it in the entire story?
I think that, you know, throughout the story, throughout the account of what Christ went through, he had every opportunity to do it a different way, right? Mm-hmm. But he modeled to us what trust was, right? And you know, in Gethsemane, he's, you know, if there's any other way, please take it, you know.
But
your will be
done. Not my will,
right?
But your will. Yeah. So it's so interesting to me that, you know, I kind of joke with people. I'm like, if you're tired of hearing about Jesus showing up, then you might not want to be here because it's happened every single week. But it's just fascinating to me that I'm really convinced that every character and story of the Bible is meant to point us to Jesus.
Yeah.
Every person is not directly, but in so many cases, a type for Jesus, meant to point us to Jesus. And I believe it happens in Jacob's life. That he does he is the almost anti, you know, right. Jesus of, I'm going to do things my way and my time, and Jesus is completely opposite. He says, that I only do what my father tells me to do.
Yeah.
Whatever he says is what I say. I also think if you go further into Jacob's story, like about Genesis 33, I think it is, he has this literally life-changing moment.
Yeah.
As he wrestles with God, which is, again, it's just a weird story, by the way. But there is a lot of symbolism in that. In that God dislocates Jacob's hip. All of Jacob's life, he was known for wrestling and running and not really confronting issues. And God said, we're going to stop running now, Jacob.
Yeah.
And we're going to meet this problem head on. There's no running away from it anymore. And I was telling people on Sunday, I really am convinced that Jacob, have you ever broken a bone before in your body?
Yes.
Okay. Do you still kind of bear the mark of that and know that you broke that bone? Like, yes. It still gives you some problems?
Not problems, just I can see where it was.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So for me, I broke my wrist.
More of a scar.
I broke my wrist. I tore my Achilles. Both of them, I can still tell that I did that. Those will never be the same
right. My
entire life. I believe the same for Jacob. Like he walked and he limped the rest of his life. And I think that what God is demonstrating there through Jacob's life is very much a Christ connection, is that he comes to a point in all of time and humanity where he says, we can't keep running from the problem anymore. Sin.
Yeah.
Your separation from me through sin. And because of that, we have to finally and fully take care of this. And that happens when Jesus himself becomes the willing and voluntary sacrifice to go to the cross and once for all time die for us. Now, again, there's probably, I think, about a million and one other connections that Christ can pull from that. But I just see that as a really clear connection from Jacob's life. And you said it very well, that and it's what we've been talking about, is that at every and any point in our lives where we think we can get ahead of God, we aren't. And as we're going to find out next week, just as I always like to do a little seg for next week, we always talk about that there's a plan A and a plan B and a plan C. There's only ever a plan A with God.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how far we want to try to get in front of him, how much we think we're going to outsmart him, or how bad we mess up and blow up our life, God is always constantly and consistently working in plan A. He's like, you never got me off the path, man. Yeah. I'm plan A all the way.
Because his plan was perfect from the beginning.
Perfect. Yeah. It was all worked out.
We only have a plan B, C, and D because we're not quite sure of A.
We don't trust. Yeah. And so I think that's what we leave you with today and kind of think through, is in what area and what parts of your life are you trying to run ahead of God? And you try to do things in your own time and in your own way. And the plea would be that you would stop running. And that God would be able to get a hold of you and change your life to be much more trusting, much more faithful. And so I think this is a really great way to end for today. It's a really kind of powerful question, honestly. Where are you running from God?
Yeah.
Where do you need to stop? Where do you need to fall into?
Stop running before you break a hip.
Yes, you're going to break a hip. So stop running and then to fall right into the center of God's will and God's plan for your life. And so as always, like I said, we love to just take some time to digest God's word a little deeper, and that we are really privileged to have you and honored to have you be a part of this and listen to us. And so until we come to you again next time, be well.
See you guys. Dun, dun, dun.